With us today is Don Watkins. He is a co-author of the national bestseller, Free Market Revolution, How Ayn Rand's Ideas Can End Big Government. He is a Forbes.com columnist, a blogger at Liège Vier, The Uncompromised Case for Capitalism, a fellow at the Ayn Rand Institute, and founder of Good Copy Coaching. And Don's agreed to come on and speak with us today about the theme success in writing. And welcome to Reasons for Success, Don.
Good to be here.
Thank you. So I would like to start a little bit about your personal experiences with writing. And then from there, we'll go into more general advice and how can we be successful in writing or with writing. So talk to us a little bit about your average day. How much time every day do you spend writing?
Well, nowadays I've actually reduced the amount of time I've spent writing from, you know, I used to do it anywhere from 6 to 8 hours, and now I aim to keep it between 3 and 4. And I do that not in order to write less, but in order to write more, which we can talk about if you want.
Hmm. Now, that does sound fascinating. Why don't we go ahead and talk about that now since you brought it up?
So the key with writing is to be purposeful. And the main thing I focused on in my work in the last several months in terms of really trying to make it as efficient as possible is becoming more purposeful. And so one of the things that I found is that when I just give my assignment, all right, go to work and write a lot, it's very easy to do things that are relevant to writing, that look like writing, that give your the subconscious the direction, write, and yet don't result in more writing. And so one of the things I've done and implemented is it has several aspects. So one is that everything is going to be much more purposeful. So whenever I'm at an element in the writing process, I'm going to define the endpoint. What am I aiming to achieve? The second thing I'm going to do is I'm going to give myself a deadline. And oftentimes that will be something like, all right, in 30 minutes, I'm going to have a rough draft or an outline, whatever the case may be. And then the third is, given my constraints, what does good enough look like? So given that I'm trying to put out a blog post a day, let's assume, what does constitute a good blog post? Surely you can always improve something into infinity, but what do I need to do in order to make it good enough to push on to the next level? And so by putting those things together, I've been able to make my writing more purposeful and as a result, been able to move it forward at a faster rate than in the past.
I can relate. And my writing is at the point where it is extremely slow. and I think part of that is because I haven't been as purposeful and as knowledgeable about how to do it well. And I think, and that's a big part of why when I came across your site and your materials, I was like, this is what I need. So who else would you say are the biggest influences on helping you become a successful writer?
Well, I mean, I did not start out as a born writer by any means. I always liked writing. There were things about it that drew it to me. And I had certain skills. I could put together a semi-coherent sentence. But if you had ever seen my ninth grade journalism papers, this was the first big high school class that I took in writing, it was a train wreck. And it was a train wreck in which I'm still semi in touch with my high school journalism teacher. And I don't think she can quite believe that I've become a professional writer because, you know, I couldn't really put together a sentence, certainly not a paragraph. My spelling was atrocious. It whatever I was trying to do, it was not having the effect I wanted to have. And really there were three things that saved me. So one was just I was a big reader. And so the more you read, the better your writing skills would become naturally. The second was I read a lot about writing. I was always interested in the art of writing. And so there are not as many as I'd like, but there are some good resources out there, and I took advantage of those.
Any in particular you would recommend?
I would say that the two big ones, and there's more, but off the top of my head, or let's say three big ones, Ayn Rand's The Art of Nonfiction, I think, is incredible. It's a great resource. It wasn't around when I was younger, but it's definitely valuable. Then the other two I would recommend are Strunk and White's Elements of Style. This is a classic that every writer recommends, but there's a reason why. It's very valuable. And then a book that my high school journalism teacher recommended to me or made us read that changed my whole perspective on writing, and I would say in terms of books was probably the most valuable to me, is a book by a guy named William Zinsser called On Writing Well. And that was very powerful. His biggest piece of advice was that the essence of good writing is clarity, and that one of the keys to clarity is to eliminate clutter, is to cut out as many filler words, to get right down to the essence of what you want to say. So those two things were important, but the real turning point, what changed everything for me and really turned me in from somebody who liked to write into a professional writer, was finding a handful of mentors who could give me ongoing one-on-one advice. And I was lucky enough when I came to work at the Ayn Rand Institute, where I currently work, to find several of those, including people like Ankar Gatte and Alex Epstein, who at that point worked at the Institute, who really were able to give me individualized feedback and allow me to see what particular mistakes was I making and how in particular could I improve upon those. And so I would say the universal point here is that for anybody who's trying to learn communication skills, study good communicators, read stuff on good communication, and find people who are good communicators who can mentor you and give you the kind of one-on-one feedback that will allow you to succeed.
That's fantastic advice. All right, so in 2012, you published your first book. I'm hopeful the first of many, Free Market Revolution, and it became a national bestseller. Not bad for your first book. Could you walk us through the process you took while writing this? I think you said somewhere it took almost 3 years. Is that correct?
So it was 3 years from inception to finish. The first year, in many ways, was the hardest and the slowest. And we can talk about why that was in more depth, but the basic answer is I was still figuring out what the heck I was doing. Mm-hmm. And the real writing, the drafting, primarily came in year two, and the year three was primarily editing. It wasn't neatly split up like that, but that's roughly what went into it. And I mean, the real essence of the book was figuring out what we wanted to say. I co-wrote it with the head of the Ayn Rand Institute, Yaron Brook.
Right.
And we had a kernel of an idea, and then the 3 years were really the working out of what that idea needed to look like once on paper.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what would you think were your biggest struggles while writing this book, and how did you overcome those struggles?
I would name three. So one, and this was the hardest really, was thinking. And that is, in any writing process, it's a process of communication. And that means there's stuff in your head that you want to get in other people's head. The problem was, what was in our head wasn't yet clear. At a very high level, so our book is the way in which our culture's moral views affect our economic views. Our view of good and bad affects our view of what's good and bad economically. And at a very high level, that had been laid out by Ayn Rand, the namesake of the Ayn Rand Institute where we work. But nobody had really worked it out in detail about the way in which moral views control and affect people's political and economic views. And so it took a really long time to figure out what exactly does it mean to say that morality affects economics. And in many ways, that was the hardest challenge, is figuring out the way in which that played out in reality. Because you can say at a very high level, well, if people don't morally value free markets, right, they're not going to value free markets. But
right.
Most people don't sit around going, I don't morally value free markets. So,
yeah, I wish it was that easy. Yeah.
So the thinking was the number one problem. Mm-hmm. The number two problem was the research. we wanted a story. We wanted a book filled with stories. We wanted a book told through the concrete, a book that took each element and showed in reality examples of whatever principle, whatever abstract idea we were talking about. The research for that took a long time. It took a lot of effort because you can't really look in the index for way in which, you know, altruism affects business, which is one of the subjects we talked about. You just have to read a lot and hope you bump into something, in effect. So that was a big challenge. So a lot of research went into the book. And then number three, I would say, is style. Our book has a very different style from people who've written on these kinds of issues, who have written from the perspective of Ayn Rand's philosophy. And that style had to be developed. When I first started writing the book, I didn't even have my own style yet. I had no clue really what I was doing. I'd only been writing for the Institute for a couple of years. And so I had to really toy with things. I knew what I wanted it to feel like. I didn't know what I wanted it to look like. To give you an example, both Yaron and I, we admired, not for his conclusions, but for his style, people like Malcolm Gladwell, who wrote the book Blink and Tipping Point. Somebody who is really able to engage people in abstract writing, or somebody like Thomas Sowell, who is able to make complicated ideas clear and interesting. But we wanted to do it our own way, and in particular, since I did the drafting, I wanted to do it my way. And so figuring out and crafting a style, that was a very hard process.
Okay. And I think you touched on this a little bit, but working with a co-author, Jørn Brook, I'm sure from what I've seen, he's an absolutely brilliant communicator and I'm assuming a great writer. But how did you split up the work? What was it like working with a co-author, and would you recommend it for others, and what to look out for? And that's a lot of questions, but
co-authorship is very hard. The more academic it is, I think the easier it is, because you're not concerned so much with issues of style, but with content. But with our type of book, it was very hard. Now, and Yaron has said this publicly, but the way that our book worked is, I think, the way many co-authorships worked, which is Yaron had a lot of big picture guidance and he gave a lot of editorial feedback. But all of the writing was done by me. And then the basic goal was make sure we had a consistent vision. And then Yaron was very good at pushing me to be better, which is one of the best things a coach can do, is say that could be more concrete, that could be more invigorating, that could be more powerful, that could be more concrete, really pushing you to do better. And that was, I think, a lot of what went into our co-authorship. The main thing I would say is it can work. It's hard to make it work. The key is make sure you have a basic vision of where you want to go. Because if you do, then you can make it work. But if you have fundamentally different visions, at some point it's going to unravel.
Right. That makes sense. Okay. So now you were also a Forbes.com columnist. How did you get that role? I mean, I'm assuming that was through the Ayn Rand Institute, helped promote you tell me about that process. I mean, imagine this is a major, magazine. How do you get op-eds into those types of top magazines?
Frankly, I don't know. the way it worked in my case was, Yaron had a pre-existing relationship with Forbes, and they had asked him to write a regular column for their website, and he said, well, I'll do it if Don can write with me. And they said, sure, and so they let me on. I'm not sure, and I should say, I've been published in some pretty good places. A lot of that I owe, I wrote the content, but a lot of that I owe to, we have a very good media department, which has develops these relationships. But the broad issue is, be a good writer. If you write stuff that people want to read, you'll get published. There's no such thing, particularly today, as I write really good stuff and nobody wants to publish it. If nobody wants to publish it, there's problems with your piece. And it's not just that you disagree with people's conclusions, because I have very controversial conclusions, and yet there's not really a problem getting published. I think you have to be hard on yourself, and you have to think, is this really interesting to people? Particularly, is this interesting to people who disagree with it and who I want to agree with it? The key thing that I've tried to focus on as a writer, A, is being a good thinker. That's the precondition for everything. If you don't know how to think, you're not going to be able to write. But I've also focused, and I think it's very important that we focus. We are, and let me put it more strongly, just for the purpose of making a point. We're entertainers. If your writing's not entertaining, and I don't mean, oh, it makes people laugh 10 times a second, although that doesn't hurt. If you're not entertaining, if your writing does not give people a value of reading it beyond just the fact that you think your conclusion is true, you're done for. Because people have a million options, and if what you're writing doesn't have something that appeals to them, and appeals to them as an experience, you're not going to be successful. So I'd say if you want to be a better writer, improve as a thinker, and improve as a person who's really trying to provide a value to people. And the value can't just be my conclusion is good. It should be my reading experience is good. Yeah. You want both.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I think that really captures in a nutshell what I've admired in other people's writings, I think, is that same experience that you just described. All right, so what led you to create Good Copy Coaching?
Well, I've said, in part, I've given my reason. After I finished Free Market Revolution and promoted it for a while, I met a lot of people as I toured for the book. And I got a lot of questions about, well, how do I do what you do? And authors hear this all the time, is how do I get a book? And, you give your kind of pat answer. But I really started to think about it because I liked the process of helping people improve their communication skills. And I started thinking about a lecture I listened to by one of my writing mentors, Leonard Peikoff, who was the understudy of my favorite writer of all time, Ayn Rand. And he had given a lecture on writing, and he said, the key to becoming a good writer is to have Ayn Rand as your editor. Which, you're laughing, you know the punchline to this, Ayn Rand has been dead since 1982. Hard to make that work out for most of us. Now, I did have the virtue ultimately later on of being edited by people who were really good on their own. But what I realized is not many people have the opportunity that I did to go move to California, work at the Ayn Rand Institute or some other place where you get that individualized feedback. And yet I realized that there's a lot of people like me who valued that and who could really benefit from it. And so I started to think, what could I do to give that value to people who can't become writers full time right off the bat? And I asked myself, do I think I could come up with some content and an approach that would help them improve? And that's what I've really tried to do with my coaching. The basic idea is create products that I think teach a lot of what I've learned that has not yet been taught on the market in an accessible way, and then make my own one-on-one services available for the people who are very serious about improving their own writing and give them the mentorship that I got only because I was lucky enough to work at a place where that was my job. So that really was the kernel of what became Good Copy Coaching.
Excellent. All right. So I believe you say on, I don't know if it's on your website or in your book, that good writing can help you succeed in life. And what do you mean by that?
Sure. Well, if you listen to virtually any success guru who knows what he's talking about, one of the things they'll say at one point or another is that communication skills are crucial to success. And it shouldn't be a big surprise, right? Think about, what does success consist of? Well, at a fundamental level, it consists of creating value in the marketplace. Communication is just a means of communicating value. It's a means of letting people know things that they care about. So whether you're a marketer who's trying to sell some product, whether you're an employee who's trying to sell the boss on a solution, whether you are a professional communicator whose bread and butter is communication. All of that relies on the ability to take your vision and make it objective to another person, and indeed make it enticing to another person. And so one of the things that you see across the board, almost without fail, almost without exception, is that very successful people are incredible communicators. Maybe only in one realm. Maybe they're only great speakers. Maybe they're only great one-on-one salesmen. Maybe they're only great on radio or TV or writing. But one way or another, they are great communicators. And so the fact is that if you want to be more successful in any realm, and I really do mean any realm, even if you're an engineer who sits and builds, you know, computer software, being a great communicator is going to help you achieve your goals virtually better than any other skill I can think of.
I can see that. All right, so what would you say then would be, and I think you might have touched on this earlier, what would you say are the essential skills or habits needed to be a successful writer or a better writer for whatever career you're in?
So there's a lot that goes into that question. Let me give a couple keys that I think are crucial. So first of all is the ability, and it's an acquired ability, it's not something we're born with, to put yourself in the shoes of your audience. The key to writing is to be able to think like the audience and not like you. Because the fact is that most of us, our biggest writing errors are that we write in effect for ourselves. We write as if we're the only reader. But the reader is the reader. And so the more that we're able to really think like the reader and feel like the reader, the better communicators will be. And by reader, I mean whoever's receiving a form of communication, whether it's speaking, radio, anything. You want to think like the viewer or the reader. The second thing I would say is having a writing process. The fundamental cognitive difficulty of writing is that some elements of writing rely on primarily in the subconscious, and some elements rely primarily in the conscious mind. And the reason I think that most of us get stuck or have difficulty in communication is because we either rely on the conscious when we should be relying primarily in the subconscious, we rely on the subconscious when we should be relying primarily in the conscious, or we try to do the same, both of them at the same time. All of those create problems. And if you have a solid writing process or communications process that tells you first do A, then do B, then do C, what a communications process should do is it should make automatic which aspect of your mind you're dealing with. So those are really the two keys more than anything else, being able to think like the audience and being able to follow a powerful process that will make you a communications master.
Now, that process you're talking about reminds me, at least the ability to use, to tap the subconscious and conscious, reminds me a lot of getting things done process. And that you want to, when you're brainstorming or whenever things pop into your mind subconsciously, write it down, but don't think about or don't use the conscious thinking at the same time, because that just screws you up. And it sounds like this might be something similar in the writing process.
There's definitely overlap. One of the great achievements of getting things done, the methodology developed by David Allen, is that he's very considerate of your mind and the respective qualities of the conscious and the subconscious. Let me just give you one example. One of the things that I deal with as a writing coach more than anything is people who suffer with writing procrastination. They want to write, but whenever they look at that desk, it becomes very scary and they don't do it. And I sympathize. That never goes away. As a writer, you will always experience that fear. Maybe some people don't. I've never met them. And what it really amounts to, that fear, is I don't know what to do next. That's the whole idea behind David Allen. David Allen's ideas, break things into, get everything out of your head and then break it down into your next action, your next physical step. Because one of the reasons we procrastinate is we don't know what to do. And what don't know what to do means I don't know what to do next. And in writing, knowing what to do next, it can still be a little scary, but if you know the next physical action that you have to take, you can get started. And once you get started, it's much easier. So one of the things I teach people to do is to break down what's your next writing action. And in part, that's related to what we were talking about before, about having a writing process. Writing process generally gives you the next action.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talk about this process in your ebook, The Ultimate Writing Recipe, which I believe you define as your TOD, T-O-D-E, thinking, outlining, drafting, editing. I guess you've kind of already answered this. Why does this recipe work?
I've given the essential answer that it lays down the basic steps that you should follow in order to be able to produce a piece of writing. And the reason it works is because it's consonant with the way our minds work. I call it the toad recipe. You know, it's not eating frog legs, but it's the stages that you have to go through in order to produce something that of written paper. The main problem that I see in people is that they really try to combine all these into one. So basically, this is what most people do when they want to write something. They sit down with a piece of paper, more likely today the computer. It's completely blank, and they start typing away, and they don't like what it says, so they backspace a little bit, and they try to make it more coherent, they try to make it more convincing, more persuasive, da 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 da. And so, we've all been there. What they're doing is they're combining three writing steps really into one and skipping a writing step altogether. Is they're combining thinking, drafting, and outline and editing all at once. It's paralyzing. You can do it. And a lot of people argue with me, Don, I don't want to go through your complicated process. I work just fine. Yeah, you can get something to come out of that process. It'll take longer. It'll be harder. And the result will be less positive, less effective than if you break things up. And the way that I talk about breaking them up is really, above all, separate writing and thinking. If that's the only thing you do in writing, I don't care about your editing. I don't care about your outline. If all you do is say, I'm going to think before I write, I'm going to think about what I want to say and who my audience is, and then I'm going to write, you will be so ahead of the game, you will not believe it. And so the number one piece of advice I give to people who want to be better writers is think, then write. If you just do that, if you separate those two things, you'll be ahead of the game. And when I say think and write, you can think on paper. You can think at your computer. But don't view it as the same process as communication. Think for yourself. Get clear on what you want to say. And then write for other people. And then I try to flesh out some other tools and some other steps that will make that even more effective. But that, above all, separate those two and you'll really see your writing improve.
Excellent. So you also offer personal coaching, as you already said, to become a master communicator. Could you walk us through what someone can expect from this coaching?
Sure. It's very individualized. This is really about determining with a client what his communication goals are and then helping them achieve them. Now, I really separate out what I offer into three elements. And one is improve your thinking. Two is improve your communication. And then three is improve your productivity. I think these are all interrelated skills, but to the extent that a client wants one or the other, we can focus in on those. And so the way that it generally works is that we sit down with somebody at the beginning, figure out what their goals are, figure out what their strengths are, and figure out what their weaknesses are. And then what I try to do is I try to move them towards success at the fastest pace possible. Look, you could go all day and tell somebody what's wrong with your communication. I don't find that too helpful. What I try to do is perform an 80-20 analysis on each client. What are the 20% of things that can give them 80% of their results? what is the core small number of things they can improve on, the big picture stuff that in a short amount of time will make them not a perfect communicator, but so substantially better that people won't recognize their old stuff. And so each lesson, my goal is to focus in on at least one big picture item that will lead them a quantum leap forward or a light year forward in their communication skills. And so the goal is not to have somebody in this kind of coaching forever, but how quickly can we get you essentially to where you want to go? And, you know, it's just in its beginning stages, but we've had a lot of very good luck with people in doing that.
Well, Don, any parting words before we sign off?
I would say this. Above all, it's very easy whenever you're learning a new skill to treat it as, can I do this or not? And there's a lot of self-doubt involved in learning any new skill. Let me tell you a story. So when I turned 30, a little less than a year ago, my wife bought me a piano. And it was always something I wanted to do, but it was always something that, you know, I'd said someday, someday. And then I turned 30 and said, all right, it's now or never. I really have to sit down and do this. Well, whenever you start a new skill, and this was my experience of piano, it's very scary. You don't know anything. You don't know where to start. And it feels like I'm never going to be able to get this, particularly when you look at somebody who's very good. But the key thing to remember is all skills are learned, which means all skills are learnable. If one person did it, you can do it. And writing is simply a skill. It's a very complex skill. And so I don't want to minimize how hard it is and pretend that you can do it overnight. But I've found that a lot of people fear, maybe I'm just not a writer. Maybe I'm just not a speaker. I'm willing to wager money that I can teach any single person listening to this to improve their skills more than they could ever imagine. And the reason is I've been there. I mean, the fact is, when I first started, set aside a writer, I had a little bit of raw talent as a writer. I had none as a speaker. When I first arrived at the Institute, the Ayn Rand Institute, I remember one of my colleagues was talking to me one of my first weeks there, and he spoke in these clear, coherent sentences that sounded like he had, you know, thought it all out and edited it even. And I could barely get through a sentence without stammering and backtracking and getting lost in my thought. And that felt like, well, that's just how I am. I can't fix that. And yet over the course of several years, I was able to radically change it to the point now where I'm a very successful speaker, where I can get in front of an audience with virtually no notes and give off the top of my head a very powerful talk. And all it is a skill. And it's a skill it took me years to develop, but I think I found some of the keys that can help somebody develop much faster. But the bottom line in all this is that this is learnable. So however much you're convinced that this is something where you're just not good at it, really think, have I ever learned a skill I wasn't good at before? And if so, you can become a good writer and a good communicator.
Excellent advice. Well, Don, thank you for your time. This was I thoroughly enjoyed it. We look forward to seeing more good stuff coming from you.
Great. It's my pleasure.
All right. Take care.
Thanks.